So the mining industry has clearly been a very important part of the New South Wales and Australian economies for a very long time. So coal from New South Wales was in fact Australia's first export, and coal from New South Wales continues to contribute to Australia's exports over 200 years later. Gold was first discovered in New South Wales in the early 1850s, and the iconic mining company BHP, which is sponsoring this session, was created in Broken Hill in the 1880s. Today, I'm going to give a brief overview of how the mining boom has affected the domestic economy over the past decade or so. In many ways, I'll be recapping some of the things that Henry was just talking about. And then I'm going to turn to the forces that are currently at work in the mining industry and how they might affect the domestic economy going forward. As a central banker, my normal focus for the outlook of the domestic economy is the next couple of years or so. But there are much longer-lived structural forces at work, as well as short-run factors. And so in recognition of this, I'm going to finish up by talking about some of the longer-run trends in demand associated with the economic development of China. So developments in the mining industry have played a very important role in the dynamics of the Australian macroeconomy over the past 10 years or so. The increase in demand for raw commodities coming from emerging markets over the 2000s took many, including the Reserve Bank, by surprise. However, as many people in this audience know, it takes some time to ramp up large investment projects, and so the supply could not keep up with the rapid increase in demand, and the result was a substantial rise in commodity prices. So what we have here on the graph, the black line, is the Reserve Bank of Australia's measure of commodity prices. The rise in commodity prices has had many positive effects on the Australian economy. The first is that the Australian terms of trade increased to historically unprecedented levels. And this is the blue line in the graph. This boosted the purchasing power of domestic income. And as usually happens, the terms of trade increase was accompanied by an exchange rate appreciation, which is represented by the red line in this graph. This effectively redistributed some of the benefits from the rise in the terms of trade to the broader economy in the form of lower import prices. Secondly, the rise in commodity prices sparked a substantial rise in mining investment. Prior to the boom, mining investment was around 2% of GDP. And it peaked at almost 8% of GDP in 2013. In the graph, we have mining investment as the blue line, but you can also see what impact that had on the stock of capital in the mining sector, which is the red line. So this investment clearly had a direct benefit to all those who were able to get jobs in the mining industry, but there were also significant spillovers, because the investment generated demand for goods and services from other parts of the economy that are not defined as mining per se. So these include areas such as manufacturing and business services. Bank research estimates that resource-related activity is much more labour-intensive than resource extraction and probably accounted for almost 7% of employment in 2011-12. And that's an increase from around 2.5% in 2003-04, which is the usual point where we time the beginning of the investment boom. Also relating to something that Henry pointed out, research by some of my colleagues at the bank has recently estimated that the total effect of the mining boom boosted living standards in Australia, as measured by the real per capita household disposable income, by more than 10% over the decade to 2013. As we've also mentioned in Henry's presentation, and I'm sure will come up a lot during the day, the Australian economy is in a transition from this investment phase through to a production phase. we've now seen the peak of mining investment, and over the near term, we expect that the fall in mining investment will be a significant drag on GDP growth. There is, however, some uncertainty around how fast and how far mining investment will fall over the near term, and the extent to which investment in the operational aspects of mining will contribute to growth. The expansion of production capacity for iron ore and coal has already had a direct effect on Australia's exports. And they, in turn, have made a significant contribution to real GDP growth over the past year or so. Iron ore and, to a lesser extent, coal exports are expected to continue to make a positive contribution to GDP growth in the next couple of years as production capacity as a result of the mining investment continues to ramp up. LNG production capacity will also start coming online over the next year, and this will provide another significant boost to resource exports. The increase in Australia's production capacity has boosted the global supply of iron ore and coal, as has the increase in the production capacity in a number of other countries that have responded to the same fundamentals. Much of the fall in iron ore and coal prices that we've seen over the past year or so is the result of increasing global supply. Recently, there's also been some easing in demand associated with slower growth in Chinese steel production. The resulting fall in Australia's terms of trade is expected to weigh on household incomes. Just as the rise in the terms of trade was accompanied by an appreciation of the exchange rate, their fall has been accompanied by a depreciation. Our assessment is that despite the depreciation we've seen since 2013, the Australian dollar remains above most estimates of its fundamental value. The transition from the investment phase to the production phase of the mining boom is a significant structural change, and there are likely to be significant distributional effects. There will be a decline in mining employment, and the types of labour that are required to maintain production of an operating mine or an LNG train are usually quite different to those that were required in the investment or construction phase. Having said that, information that we've obtained from our business liaison program, which is a group of people that go out and regularly talk to businesses that are in the process of doing their business activities, suggests that many of the people who were employed in the investment phase of the mining boom had previous experience in the construction sector, and that many of these people are expected to return to the construction industry. So this is not to downplay the challenges related to the fact that a lot of these opportunities are in different parts of the country to where the mining activity has taken place. The question of what might happen to commodity prices in the longer run will depend on the dynamics of global supply and global demand. And it's very difficult to know or predict how they will play out, but we can say something about the longer term forces that are likely to affect demand for our commodity exports. In the time that remains, I will talk about some of the main longer term drivers of Chinese demand for commodities, which currently accounts for a bit over 40% of our commodity exports. Chinese GDP growth has been easing from the rapid pace seen over the past decades or so to a little less than 7.5%. Unless productivity growth is particularly strong, supply-side factors, such as the declining working-age population, will make it harder for China to maintain this growth over time. This will affect demand for commodities produced by Australia and elsewhere. Yet, even if the sustainable growth trajectory for the Chinese economy gradually declines over the medium term, the economy is much larger than it was, and it is still growing. This implies there will continue to be a huge appetite for the commodities that we export and a variety of commodities exported all over the world. Some of this demand can be satisfied by production within China. But given the competitiveness of the Australian production in a number of commodities, China is likely to remain a large market for Australian resource exports for some time to come. We also know that the nature of growth in China is changing as the economy evolves and matures. One of the driving forces of this change has been the process of urbanisation. Between the early 1990s and today, the proportion of the Chinese population living in urban areas has doubled. Projections based on data from international organisations suggest that China's urbanisation process still has some way further to run, although the pace is likely to slow. Urbanisation has had a huge impact on China's demand for commodities. This process tends to be associated with increases in the amount of food consumed and its calorific and protein content. It also has led to a huge increase in demand for commodities to build housing, infrastructure, utilities, and public buildings. Work by researchers at the bank suggests that the peak in steel demand for the construction of housing is actually likely to occur quite a bit later than the peak in residential construction. This is because the steel intensity of Chinese construction is increasing over time as the result of buildings becoming taller and incorporating features such as underground car parks. For example, some estimates suggest that a 50-floor building requires roughly double the amount of steel per square metre as a 15-floor building. As the economy matures, consumption is likely to become a more important driver of growth in China. Estimates based on data from 2011 suggest that Chinese investment uses output from the Australian mining industry much more intensively than Chinese consumption. However, just as some of the components of investment, such as housing construction, are likely to become more commodity intensive, so too will some of the important components of consumption. And the example I have here is motor vehicles. So motor vehicle use in China is still very low by international standards. But as cities grow and incomes rise, this is likely to become a more important source of steel demand. China's per capita energy consumption is also currently low relative to that in many advanced economies. This suggests that Chinese energy consumption will increase as the economy develops. The question is then, how will this increase in demand be satisfied? China's energy consumption is currently heavily tilted towards coal. In 2013, coal accounted for 2/3 of China's energy consumption. Until the late 2000s, nearly all of this demand was satisfied by coal produced within China itself. However, in recent years, there has been a surge in Chinese coal imports that is likely to reflect the fact that steel production has grown rapidly and there has been a fall in the cost of globally supplied coal relative to the cost of coal production within China. The sheer size of Chinese demand for coal means that although China's imports of coal still amount to less than 10% of domestic coal consumption, they account for almost 1/4 of global trade in coal. The Chinese authorities have expressed concerns about air pollution and carbon emissions more generally. One recent manifestation of this was the joint announcement between China and the United States on carbon emissions. The effect of policies designed to address these concerns could put downward pressure on coal consumption in China. But the implications for Australia's coal export volumes will depend on a number of factors, including relative prices and the competitiveness of our producers. Unlike other fossil fuels, the Chinese government is actively pushing to increase the share of gas in domestic energy consumption. It's doing this by increasing the use of pipeline gas, increasing its LNG imports, as well as exploring tapping of its own potentially substantial reserves of unconventional gas. Consumption of LNG in China has more than quadrupled in the past decade, and China is now the third largest importer of LNG in the world. Most of this has been the result of an increase in demand for industrial uses, but residential consumption is also growing very quickly. This trend in itself is positive for the outlook for Australian LNG exports, but the significance of this trend will very much depend on the price and availability of all sources of energy commodities in the years to come. So in conclusion, just as the mining investment boom spurred high commodity prices and had a substantial impact on the Australian economy, so too will the transition from the investment to the production phase. This dramatic increase in Australia's capacity to export commodities, along with similar responses from other resource producers around the globe, has increased global supply relative to global demand to the point where prices for these commodities have fallen. Supply will continue to respond to and affect commodity prices. And while the growth in Chinese demand is slowing, many of the long-term drivers of the original increase in demand for commodities are still in play. The Chinese economy is continuing to evolve in ways that will support demand for resources, and the sheer size of the economy suggests that these demand forces will, over the medium to long term, remain strong.
You actually give quite a reasonable outlook for coal. Notwithstanding renewables and gas developments around the world, it does still seem, and even the Prime Minister alluded to this last week, as I mentioned earlier to the audience, that really there is still a driving demand for coal in the developing world, certainly India as it comes on stream, and also it seems as though there is still base demand there in China.
Yeah, so I think the bottom line is that the evolution of these economies and the size of these economies means that there will be demand for resources. It's very difficult to predict exactly how that will play out and what sort of combination will end up being demanded and that we'll be able to export. But ultimately, these are very large economies that will have very strong demand. But they need energy.
Yes, that's right. They need energy to develop. You also pointed out there very clearly that this is not only a supply side issue, because there is clearly more supply of a range of different commodities coming out there, but even if then demand drops off just that little bit, it's going to be reflected in price, and that's almost what you're seeing right now.
Yeah, so I think what I tried to convey is that there's short-run factors, so if we have a decline in steel demand at the moment, that will have an effect, but there's also these long-run drivers of demand and the long-run supply effects, and so they're really important as well to think about the long-run prospects.
The systemic side of it, though, populations in China and India do continue to rise, and therefore development rises as urbanisation increases, as you pointed out. That means there is still there is going to be significant base demand for the commodities that build the cities.
Absolutely. So I referred to some bank research that looked at what sort of demand for steel would come from residential construction. And so they have to make a lot of assumptions and use data that are imperfect. But basically, they suggested that the peak in steel demand could easily be something like 10 years after the actual peak in residential construction, just because of the compositional shift and the increase in steel intensity. The quality of the buildings they're building increase. They require more steel. They require more copper. They require a lot of commodities. I don't mean to just focus on iron ore and coal, though from Australia's perspective, they're clearly two of the most important commodities.